My name is Rocky Racco, and I've been in the industry about 43 years now.
Welcome to Voices of Travel, The Next Chapters, an interview series that captures the passion, humor, and character of 15 remarkable people as they tell us the stories of their careers in the industry. Rocky, thanks for joining me. Now, if my memory serves, your family had a travel agency. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
That's exactly right. I was actually, from the age of five, my parents groomed my brother and I to become lawyers. And when I was at the University of Toronto, and then I was in third year hanging around, I kind of looked around, I thought, you know what, this just doesn't feel right for me. And by that point, my parents had opened up literally a mom-pa travel agency within my dad's real estate offices. And I was 21, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to jump into the family business, predominantly because I was interested in traveling and seeing the world.
And you stayed.
And I stayed, yeah. Through a lot of changes, a lot of fabulous experiences, a lot of trials and tribulations, as we all know about, and always dynamic, always exciting, always changing. And I continually, I'm aspired, and I still love waking up and being part of this industry.
What was the travel agency business like back then? How is it different than today? How has it changed?
Well, obviously quite a bit. We were the gatekeepers of the collective information. And people, you know, if they wanted to do anything, almost came to us. We're the only people that have access to information. So that was interesting, but it was all, you know, very archaic. You know, the AGO book, the international, the North American, typing it with a computer, the phones, you know, with the dial phones and having five lines and expanding to six lines, all of that stuff. And then, you know, our first reservation systems popped up, the ResRevac offered by Up for Air Canada. We go to 130 Bloor Street, learn how to make reservations on the computer system, and then eventually print tickets within our office. And then, believe it or not, then we're introduced to the fax machine, where we didn't have to have the paper document fax. We can fax the hotels. We can confirm things. And then, you know, a while later, the internet came upon us and really changed the dynamic. All of a sudden, the exclusivity to this information, or the gatekeepers of the information, went away. And then everybody had basically access to all the information. What's working in our favor is that there's so much information out there, you almost need ourselves to kind of guide our clients in what's real, what's not real, what makes sense, what doesn't make sense. And people now use us to, you know, as a professional provider of what to really expect and make sure it gets done.
Can you talk about the change from mom and pop to consortiums to home-based? The travel agency business has certainly changed dramatically. Can you talk about that?
The one thing, because as you identified, our roots are a family-based business. So my mom is the one who convinced my dad to get in the business. And her premise was, we went on a family trip. She wasn't satisfied with the arrangements made by the travel agency, and she convinced my dad that we can do it better. But really, it was about helping people, and so that and making sure that people are better looked after. And what I've learned is the best way to make that happen is through relationships. And so what the various consortium, the various networks that we belong to, hotel groups, advisory boards, it just expands our relationship. So things haven't really changed. It's just, there's just different ways of enhancing the relationship. And through relationships, that's how we make things happen. But more importantly, it's the relationships are there. When things don't go so well, it's how to fix them. Because one thing I've learned is people don't value when everything goes well. They just think, it just happened. And of course it's going to happen. I paid you, I paid for the services. It has to happen. But they don't realize all the intricacies in the background to make it happen. And when one of those intricacies breaks down, we're there to keep, you know, to fix, keep the puzzle in place and make it all happen.
Rocky, I wanted to ask you about who your mentor was. Who is the person who had the biggest influence on you, on your career in travel?
I was thinking about that on my way over here. For sure, in the beginning days, I happened to, you know, become friendly with Aaron Ruse. So Aaron Ruse had a successful travel agency back then. We became part of the TTI network. And so there was a bunch of us, many of them who later became Vision Travel and now Direct Travel. So through Aaron, he kind of showed me the ropes as far as managing a travel agency, negotiating with the airlines, the GDSs, and then we would share information. But people who are really aspired along the lines is, I mean, we within Canada should be very proud. You mentioned one of your trips. Your first trip to Bermuda was on Ward Air. I mean, to me, the pioneer that Max Ward was, that was very inspirational. Izzy Sharp, the founder and of the Four Seasons. And to know that we have a Canadian brand that is globally recognized and that flies the Canadian flag is, to me, very empowering. And then George Butterfield, that initiated, he was really the founder of the cycling and walking trips, and he's pioneered that. And so those folks, really, the fact that they're Canadian roots and really created a global impression, a global brand, has really inspired me.
Tell me a bit about TTI, how it started, how it's grown.
Well, we've gone through many, many iterations. As literally I mentioned earlier, the mom and pop shop. And then when I got in there, I knew nothing. So I used to read Baxter Publications. You read the editorials. And then all of a sudden, you guys would have published Fan Trip to Bahamas, $99, 1 week, Freeport, Nassau. And I jumped on. And I would just travel for 10 times. And then what happened is I gained all this firsthand destination experience. So by traveling 10 times a year, and then when people did come talking to me to speak with me, they were really pretty impressed with the fact that I had firsthand travel knowledge. So then I would look after them. They would refer me to their friends. So in the beginning, it was growing on the leisure side. Then one of the folks that I looked after, she happened to be the executive assistant to Citibank. And then she said, well, you looked after me personally. Can you handle my boss's business trip? I said, sure, why not? So I started servicing Citibank. And then people in Citibank goes, hey, there's this kid who really knows what he's doing. He's really looking after me. So referral, referral, referral. And next thing, and then that's when the beginning of corporate consolidation started happening. Citibank Canada decided to go out to bid. I was bidding against American Express, P. Lawson at the time, Ryder Travel. And then there was this agency called Dufferin Travel with me, a couple of my colleagues and my parents. And we pitched the account and we won because we were providing such great personalized service that we won the business. Then I put an on-site. Then someone from Citibank went to Midland Wallen. And then the person said, you know what, you provide such great service that we're going to make you service Midland Wallen. And then somebody went to Credit Suisse, and then someone went to Deutsche Bank, and then someone went to Monitor Consulting. And next thing you know, we are handling one of the most premium A-list of financial services. When people, hoteliers used to come from New York to visit Toronto, and they said, we want to talk to the agency that's looking after all these, they'd walk into our office, they thought we would be like a call center, huge, but in reality, there was about, by this time, 20 of us. And so we really got very good in the corporate side of the business. Another experience was I looked after someone's honeymoon business, honeymoon travel. And then a wedding organization, people who put on these bridal events, came knocking on my door saying, we understand that you know how to put honeymoons together. Would you like to exhibit at our bridal show? And I go, sure. I show up with nothing. I didn't know how to set up for a bridal show, but they liked me so much that they put me in a corner booth. They decked up my booth and it was right by the main runway. And then met a lot of people, had a nice conversation. And then through that, I opened up the division called Just Honeymoons. So a lot of people remember us as Just Honeymoons. And then later on, once I was starting to have kids, I realized that honeymoon business, you really have to service at the evenings and weekends. And I wanted something that was kind of more 9 to 5. So I kind of morphed back into the corporate side. And then someone was looking for a travel agency to look after Butterfield and Robinson's pre and post travel experiences. So we went to bid and they approached all the luxury travel agencies and such. And then once we presented our services and our airline relationships and our network relationships, we were enlisted. So Butterfield and TTI created a joint venture and we called it Door to Door. From that, I was exposed to the uber luxury side of travel. 95% of Butterfield and Robinson's clients are based out of the US. And so by needing to service them, I thought I probably need some services coming out of the States because that's where most of the travelers. And then I scoped out Virtuoso. And then by going through Virtuoso, then I learned that there's this humongous network of luxury travel providers. And was very excited because I love quality. I love when people do things for high value as opposed to looking for the cheapest price. I've never built a business or pursued a client at the lowest price or trying to find me the best deal. It's never appealed to me. It's never appealed to anybody who's ever been attracted to the company. So by becoming one of the first Virtuoso agencies, we now were starting to get introduced to high value travelers. And then we built our business with, once we had the Virtuoso, then we built up our volumes with Four Seasons and we became a preferred partner with Four Seasons, with Ritz-Carlton, the Shangri-Las, the Rocco Forte Group, and on and on and on, and the cruise lines. So now my business is 50% servicing high value leisure travelers. And the other half is blue chip corporate travelers. So we're literally at a 50-50 split right now as far as business mix.
I want to ask you about some of the events that have taken place during the course of your career. And I'm hoping you can sort of rank them for me in terms of the impact they've had on the business or how they've changed the industry. The disappearance of mom and pop agencies, commission cuts by airlines in the 1990s, the rise of the cruise industry, Y2K, 9/11, SARS 1 and 2, COVID, industry consolidation, and anything else you'd like to add to the list?
Well, the first one, I just got married in 89, and I was looking to buy a home in 90, 91. And that was the first, I don't think they called it Desert Storm or the first Iraqi war, but they declared it a war. And so by declaring a war, and again, remember, I had all these corporate, large, you know, blue chip corporations. Once they declared war, they literally said to their travelers, nobody's getting on a plane because nobody knew what being to war ensued. So for 30 days, our sales went to zero. And I was trying to buy a house. I had a deposit on a house. And I basically, oh my God, I don't know if I'm going to have a business if this keeps up. But it literally, once the 30-day, 45 days, things, the dust settled down and off we went. Every time there was a challenge such like that, people roared back in travel. So that affected me personally from, you know, my future household and all that. But eventually we went ahead and bought a home and such. We all know the 9/11. I can still to this day remember being in my office. We were sitting in a boardroom and we had to have a TV and someone said, you know, a plane just hit one of the towers, and we turned on the TV and we all must have done the same thing. It was just before 9 in the morning or 9:30 in the morning, and we were staring at it and oh my God. But we, at the time, if you recall, thought just some crazy guy, you know, pilot misstepped and crashed into a building. And next thing you know, we saw the next one hit. Once we saw the next one hit, we realized that something's going on here. So what did that do? That really, again, put the awareness of the vulnerability and using planes as missiles. So therefore, all this, we now, and we're still subject to that impact. We're going through airports, the security, the checks, the taking off the shoes, the belts, all that stuff. So that really changed things. But again, that lasted about 6 months of a potential unpredictability, but travel roared back. The one that really was unusual was the cloud ash. Remember that really hit Europe. Iceland, and then it kept morphing. We had so many clients in Europe, they were trying to get back, but the thing was moving around. So if so, we would say to clients, okay, you need to leave out of London, but you know what we're going to do is put you on a trail, go through the channel, make you get to Paris or make you go to a secondary city, pick up a plane, pick up. But as we were doing those things, again, it kept moving. So, but what happened there is all our clients were so appreciative that we hung in there with them. And my advisors worked literally almost 24/7. They were at home. They're kept, trying to figure out. We scored so many points with our clients because they realized without someone like us, how to navigate through this very volatile scenario was really going to be a challenge. And then, of course, we thought, okay, we survived that. SARS didn't really impact our business as much because we're next an outbound business as opposed to an inbound business. But I know it impacted a lot of the hotels and tourism industry. But then when COVID hit, it was just like yesterday. We just started hearing inklings that something was up in China. Then all of a sudden they decided that we were going to close the Hong Kong airport. And I thought, wow, Hong Kong is a major gateway in many respects. So I thought we need to call a town hall within, to have a sit down with our network. By that time, we're about 90 folks across the country, just to kind of get an understanding of what this could look like or what's the implication. We want to know cancellations, insurance impacts, rescheduling, rebooking, all that. But just thinking, this is just going to be a particular area. But by the time the town hall occurred, Europe decided to shut down. Now, once Europe is shutting down, we're going, wow, this is really, really unraveling. And then we have our meeting and the leadership team addressed everyone. At the very end, I'm telling you, Bob, it was just very spontaneous. I said, you know what? I'm not sure, but next Thursday, I'm going to put in everybody's calendar a follow-up meeting just in case we need it. Like 90 weeks later, we would have a town hall every week trying to deal with this constant, thing that never ended. And we thought for many times, it was away 3 months, 6 months down the road. We all miraculously thought that January 1st of 2021 and 2022, because of the change of the calendar, the new beginnings, but we quickly realized that the calendar wasn't paying attention to what COVID was doing. So, but what I was really proud of is that our town halls kept our team together, kept us connected, and I became a cheerleader. I really realized how much I love the business, and so I said, guys, if we get through this, we're bulletproof. Like, people will really want us because all the work we're doing, we're not getting compensated for it, but the value we're bringing, I go, this is actually a good thing. We just got to hang in there, and we did. And so now we're enjoying the other side of it, which is travel has roared back. And as I was mentioning to you, our 2022 sales already surpassed 2019 sales. Our 2023 sales in the first 6 months are 50% of our 2022 sales. So things are really roaring back. We just got to do a better job of believing in ourselves and making sure our clients pay us for our services and our partner suppliers realize what we do for them and make sure that they compensate us as they should and when they should.
And you're stronger now.
Much stronger and feel great. And, we happen to be one of the very few standing, substantial organizations that's Canadian owned, Canadian run. And so that's pretty good because, as you mentioned, all the consolidation, all the buying and selling, we're still standing. And I still feel really good about the business. I still love the business. And I'm really, really encouraged about the future of our business. I mean, we put a lot of blood and guts getting us to this stage, but I've built a business that I welcome I have three daughters, any of them to come into the business. One of them will most likely come into the business because I really believe in the business. But what they're going to do with this business, how they're going to value themselves, is going to really exponentially be amazing because we actually matter. We actually provide a great service to our clients. And I don't know how they would even get on a simple trip anymore without someone like us helping them along the way. It just and more people are realizing it. So we're in a pretty good place.
I wanted to ask you about technology. It's always had a role in the travel industry. And I wanted to ask you about the impact that it has had on the business, the internet, social media, and now artificial intelligence. Can you talk a little bit about technology?
The artificial intelligence, that's still too, we're too much at the frontier of that one, but so I can't overly comment. But at the beginning, when the internet showed up, and remember, we had access to all the information, and now we don't. That was like, oh my goodness, you know, how are we going to cope? But we realized that we actually could use the internet to access information a lot more expeditiously, a lot more comprehensively. So the internet actually created a lot of great information flow, accessibility to information, communication, and all the rest of the components. So it depends on how you see anything in life. Most people see change as a threat. I actually think that change is an opportunity. So the internet created an opportunity. The AI, again, I think that as much as it will replace or change a lot of the way society communicates or does things, but again, the human side of what we do, the relationship side of what we do, and if you think about earlier what I said, our business is founded on relationships. I'm not sure if a computer is going to ingratiate and create relationships. It can provide information, but at the end of the day, when you really need something, when you really need to fix things, is an AI going to be able to fix something the way we can fix things? And one thing we've learned for sure, everything's connected. If COVID taught us one thing, if somebody sneezes in Hong Kong, someone's going to get a cold in Toronto. And so having that global network, that global reach, that ability to bring in all those relationships, all that networking that we have and fix things, that is going to be our value. But instead of just giving it away almost for free as we do now, maybe we're going to have to sit back and go, you know what? You're processing transactions using AI or the internet, but maybe we're not going to be the original bookers. Maybe we're not going to be the one issuing the ticket, but maybe we're going to be the guys in the background when something goes wrong, you know, to help fix it.
So what kind of advice would you have for someone thinking about coming into the industry today? I know you mentioned your daughters earlier on. Would you say, come on in or run away now?
No. 1,000% come on in. But in which part of the industry? In what we're doing, the high-value luxury traveler or the blue-chip corporate who values our expertise, our advice, our time, our resources? Absolutely. And, you know, the independent contractor, an opportunity to actually have. So let me explain the new world of the independent travel advisor. Our folks make anywhere from $80,000 to $300,000 a year. They can operate from home. They can operate anywhere in the world, total virtual. And because we're in the luxury side, we get invited to all the most amazing places and all over the world. So not only are we sending our clients there and putting all these incredible experiences together, we actually get to personally test drive. What I ask people to come into this business is not only because I'm a CEO of my company, but these are opportunities that everyone in my company has opportunities. So it's really a great career financially, doing something that matters. And we touch everything. We touch social responsibility. We touch the Me Too movement. We touch cultural immersion. We touch indigenous issues. By sending people, connecting people, we matter. We get involved with all this stuff because we're part of a global ecosystem and we connect all those pieces. So it's really exciting. And the interest, again, the thing that kind of ties it up nicely is that there's money to be made because we're providing a valuable service. So the folks that I said are making $80,000 to $300,000, the future generation, they're going to make $300,000 to $1 million and do it really, really smart. So, just like the financial advisor, the insurance broker, the successful real estate person, you can come into our side of the business, be successful at being a trusted advisor, and you can have a very, very rewarding career.
So, Rocky, look into your crystal ball. 10 years down the road, what's the industry going to look like? How different is it going to be?
My aspirational vision is that the folks that are, and we do have a lot of folks that are in their, you know, 60s to 70-year-old to 70s, they're going to ideally pass their knowledge and wisdom and expertise to the new generation that's coming in. And it's not only the young kids coming out of school, but the people looking for a second career, the 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds, and 50-year-olds, that most recently I'm getting a lot of those folks knocking on our door. And so if we can pass on that knowledge that we've developed over the last 30, 40 years, that expertise, and then pass on to these young kids that have that technology savviness, that don't have the baggage that us legacy folks have developed over all these years and all these challenges and all these you know, things that have happened to us. We didn't talk about commission capping and all these other financial challenges. So in 10 years from now, I see if my office, the average age is going to drop by 20, 30 years. And there's going to be a lot of young people with really big smiles on their face doing a lot of cool stuff. That's what I'm envisioning.
Last question. Is there a question that I haven't asked you that I should have asked you? What is it? What's the answer?
Yeah. What would I hope we would do differently in our industry? And how should we do things? Or how do, my biggest frustration, and maybe that's the question, what is your biggest frustration? My biggest frustration is that we as an industry don't value ourselves as much as we should. We should have a lot more confidence, a lot more belief in the value that we bring to not only our clients, but our partners and our suppliers. And we should get more better financially compensated for everything we do. That's my biggest frustration, but also the biggest opportunity.
Thanks for telling us your story, Rocky. And thanks to all of you for joining me for this episode. I'm Bob Mowat, Executive Editor of Canadian Travel Press, and I hope you'll join me for another remarkable conversation on Voices of Travel, the next chapters.